This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. More and more kids in this state are choosing online schools. And when they do, they're going on your dime. Just like you pay for the public school down the street, you pay for these virtual campuses. But are they a good investment of tax dollars? A 10-month investigation by the iNews Network and Education News Colorado has found that students are losing ground in these online schools. With us is Bert Hubbard. He's editorial director at iNews. Bert, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thousands of students attend online schools in Colorado. We should say that some of these schools are for-profit, some of them are nonprofit.
Correct.
In general, how do they work?
Basically, what happens is any student in Colorado has the option of signing up for any one of 22 certified online programs. And to be certified, you apply to the state of Colorado and say, this is your curriculum. But there's really no oversight over these operations.
What grades are covered by online schools?
The whole spectrum, everywhere from kindergarten to 12th grade.
Kindergarten?
Yes. Basically, what's happened is you have homeschool families who decided they wanted to start out with their kid at home, but they wanted the curriculum, and they wanted the laptop, and they wanted the internet service. And so they're starting their kids in kindergarten on these online programs.
But I imagine that they're weighted more towards older kids.
They are. By far, if you look at the most prevalent grades are 9 through 12.
And what would school look like if I opted to join an online school?
There's a couple different models. Most of them, you actually just work from home. What happens is the operator will provide a free computer or laptop, free internet service, and then you log in to their system, whatever their curriculum is, and take the classes online. You'll have the teacher ratio is really huge because they don't have as many teachers overseeing these guys. And then you're supposed to progress at a certain rate and then finish your year or graduate, et cetera.
And I'm chatting with the teacher. I'm emailing the teacher. I'm Skyping. What do I do?
A little bit of all. Basically, a lot of it is on your own so that you're going through and you're doing the homework and so forth. And then what you'll do is you can have chat sessions with the teachers and email the teachers if you get behind or getting problems.
You looked at data on more than 10,000 students.
Correct.
In online schools. That's like 90% of them in the state.
It was, yes, correct.
What did you find?
Basically, what we looked at was students who start at the beginning of the year in October at an online school and what happened to them a year later. And more than half were no longer in that online school. And a lot that dropped out of the online programs returned to the brick-and-mortar schools, public schools. Dropouts outnumbered graduates by 3-1. Some left the state. Others returned to homeschooling where they had come from. But that more than 50% sort of churn rate compares to probably, if you took the worst high schools in Colorado, maybe 30%. Type of thing.
And you say the churn rate, that is those who drop out of the school.
Correct.
So you are, if you choose an online school, much more likely to drop out of it.
Correct.
But you're also then likely to return to the bricks and mortar school you probably left.
Correct.
And what does that mean for that traditional school that's taking these kids back in?
All of a sudden, they're having to work with a student who could be 3, 4, 5 months behind in their schoolwork. They may have not done the work. They may have started going online and said, well, you know, I don't really have to do all this homework. I don't have to keep up. When they go back to the brick and mortar, they're going in with kids who have been at a certain pace, and now they're behind that pace.
And they may have already been behind before.
Correct.
So there's a chance they're even further behind.
That's correct. And that's what the school superintendents have told us, was they are really concerned about those kids catching up.
Let's talk about performance.
Sure.
So kids enrolled in online schools, those that stay, how are their academics?
They're way behind the state averages. Now, what we looked at was we looked at sort of the basic demographics of the kids in online and statewide, and they sort of reflect the statewide demographics, i.e., they have about the same percentage of poor students and the same percentage of minority students as statewide, but their test scores are 10 to 20 percentage points behind, i.e., You know, reading, 65% of the kids in the state may be proficient. If you go to an online program, it may only be 50% of the kids.
And you're saying that the populations aren't vastly different?
No, at least as far as basic demographics.
Okay. My sense would be that a different kind of student would be attracted to an online school, potentially one who had more trouble in a traditional school. So, of course, their scores would be a bit lower.
Yes, I mean, and that's exactly what the online programs told us, was they're dealing with a different type of people. You know, it could be pregnant teenagers. It could be kids that are hazed at schools during...
Hazed, like bullied?
Exactly, being bullied. It could be kids that maybe they're really star athletes, and so they're traveling a lot, and they have to, you know, work online. We did try to do a check of what they were talking about with more at risk, and we looked at how many kids had been dropped out before they went into an online program, and we looked at how many students had been in an alternative brick and mortar school, and the numbers were fairly low.
But you are comfortable by saying it's not a vastly different student body.
That's correct. That's exactly right.
Did you learn why so many kids are either dropping out of these schools or just not doing well in them?
We got several different perspectives, and none of it probably tells the whole story. They're all sort of different stories. But we talked to a student down in south of Colorado Springs, Laura, and she had been enticed to the school by a former teacher who the online program had hired. And the teacher told her that she could get college classes, et cetera. But it wasn't for her. I mean, she didn't like staring at a computer for 5 to 6 hours a day. The college classes that she was promised, she said, never materialized. And so she, frankly, wanted to go back to her high school. And she was 3 to 4 months behind.
She felt pretty isolated.
Yes, she did. She didn't feel that she had really any help, that there wasn't any back and forth that you would get with a teacher in a classroom type of thing. And she thought, she just described it almost as wasted time.
Were there any indications that perhaps on the for-profit side, these schools were simply trying to make a buck?
There are allegations by the former president of one of them, who said that it was his impression that they wanted to recruit the students, get the state money, and how they did in the school was a secondary concern to them. They didn't really care if they dropped out, and that he noticed a lot of them were falling behind quickly.
But I imagine you also heard a lot of denial of that from the industry as well.
That's correct. Yeah, there was a lot saying, you know, we are really dealing with last chance students here. We're trying to boost them. The last thing we want to do is take financial advantage of these guys.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner. And we're talking about some of the troubles that kids are having in online schools in Colorado. These are K-12 schools. And joining us to share the results of an investigation is Bert Hubbard from iNews, the Rocky Mountain Investigative News Network. They teamed up with EdNews Colorado to look into online schools. Now, Bert, when you talk about this kind of exchange between traditional schools and online schools and then kids bouncing back, there is, you write about in this investigation, a real financial loss for the traditional schools because of this. Explain how that works.
Sure. Basically, in the state of Colorado, schools get funding for every child they have on October 1st. Again, it's about $6,200 or more dollars per student. If that student then leaves in November to go to another school, the old school keeps the money. The new school has to educate them without getting any more money.
Which is to say that if I drop out of the online school, but I was officially enrolled there in October, and I go back to the bricks and mortar school, which is maybe doing a lot of remediation.
Correct.
They aren't getting the money for it.
That's exactly right. And that's what really angers a lot of the superintendents, is that what they're doing is, in this really tight financial times for schools, every dollar counts, and they're losing money because they take the students back, but the online program is keeping the $6,200 that the state has given them.
The growth of online schools in Colorado is really remarkable.
It is.
They are growing seven times faster than traditional schools.
That's correct. I mean, you're looking at, they jump from 8,000 to 11,000 to 15,000, and now this year they're estimated to be 18,000.
Students. And how are they being recruited?
It varies by program, but you've got some fairly aggressive recruiting where you have a program called GOAL, which has vans that go around. They'll give barbecues to the students. They have mall storefront operations. They talk about how much easier it's going to be to get a diploma online. So it's very, very aggressive. And then you have the for-profit companies, and they'll advertise on radio and on TV saying, you know, sign up to our programs.
Well, let's turn to oversight. 5 years ago, state auditors blasted Colorado education officials for lax oversight of online schools.
That's correct. And then they actually then passed a state law that gave the state enforcement powers to try to hold these programs accountable. And they hired a new director to oversee the programs. And she, according to documents that we obtained, she issued corrective letters against four programs, including one of the largest, Hope Online. And then all of a sudden, all those letters were rescinded by the superintendent of schools. And that was the last time they've really used their enforcement powers.
Why were the corrective letters rescinded?
Well, it's sort of, we're not quite sure. Depends on who you talk to. When we talked to Hope Online about the rescinding of the letters, they said they should have never been issued in the first place, that they had done nothing different from the year prior when they got fine marks from the state of Colorado. The superintendent who rescinded the letters, who's now the superintendent of Las Vegas, he would not respond to us as far as why he did the action.
So how would you describe enforcement today? I mean, just lax?
It's very lax. The president of the State Board of Education makes no bones about him that he thinks that parents are the one that should be making the decisions on this, and they should not be telling the parents that this is a bad program or a good program. Let the parents decide.
Is there a concern somewhere at the top?
Yes, there is. There is now. Year after year after year of poor test scores, I think it's caught up with people. And so now they've hired a new person to oversee innovation and online programs, and she wants to go in there and take a look at what's working and what's not working in these programs and to get some more accountability standards.
Have they seen the results of this investigation?
Yes, they have, and the one thing that really concerns them a lot is the churn of the students. Mobility is one of the biggest factors in kids falling behind and then eventually dropping out of schools, and this type of churn is something that they want to see reduced.
Is part of this as well making the money trail more nimble? In other words, if a student moves, that money should move.
They have talked about doing that, but maybe having two counts, one in October and then maybe one in the spring, or maybe developing a system where the money follows the child. They haven't gotten very far along those lines right now. They're just ideas that they're kicking around.
And just recently we learned that another state audit of online schools is going to be taking place. What do you expect will come of that?
Well, this is coming from State Senator Brandon Schaefer, who's president of the State Senate. And he had done some of his own investigations. And I think what he wants to do is to see, can we follow the money trail? What nobody knows is how much does it cost to educate a child online? So is the state paying too much to these online programs? That's some of the things he wants to get at.
Well, Bert, thanks for sharing the results of your investigation with us.
Thanks for having me.
Bert Hubbard is editorial director at iNews, the Rocky Mountain Investigative News Network. iNews teamed up with Education News Colorado to look into online schools. There's a link to the results of their 10-month investigation at cpr.org.